Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Down into the corner. Bet in now behind the net. And around to Orlov, who will come down off the left-hand side, go low to high. Slavin to the right point, a shot, they score, and it's over. A puck that tipped, it looked like, right in front of Thompson, and the Carolina Hurricanes have taken game one of this best of seven second-round matchup. The shot from the right point gets through, and Carolina wins it 2-1.
Yeah, Jakub Slavin, exactly 3 minutes and 6 seconds into overtime. John Walton on the call last night on Caps Radio. That one just kind of slipped under Logan Thompson, who had been the Caps savior all night long. 2-1 Carolina in overtime. One zip now, Carolina in the series with Game 2 tomorrow night at Capital One. Good morning. Big trade in the NFL. We'll talk about that on the show coming up. Why Trey Amos may have slid a bit in the NFL draft on the show today. And you'll hear Adam Peters on the show today talk about the draft pick that excited everybody in the building as much as any other. And he also talked about the specific moment when he knew that Washington would be taking Jaden Daniels with the number 2 overall pick in last year's draft. Good morning, everybody. Emily Kaplan, who is terrific on the ABC ESPN broadcast of NHL hockey games. Last night, Sean McDonough, Ray Ferraro, and Emily Kaplan in Capital One calling Caps and Canes Game 1. No local broadcasts anymore, so we miss out on Joe B. Locker, etc. But Emily Kaplan will jump on with us in about 15 minutes to talk about last night's game from her view, ice level. Jeff Zilgit, who covers the NBA for USA Today, will be with us at noon. And Chris Russell, who's the biggest hockey fan, I think, at the station, he will jump on towards the end of the show to talk Caps and Carolina as well. So I'm going to start this show with this. You know, most of you know this. Hockey, not really my thing at all. I love the playoffs. I really do. I love the intensity and the drama of NHL playoff hockey, especially these games that go to an extra period, go to overtime. And I enjoy trying to understand the game a little bit more each year. And truly, for me, it can only happen this time of year when I'm truly paying attention and am really immersed in it. But I don't know much about hockey. Most of you don't either. Truth is, we don't know as much as we think we know about some of the other sports either, like football in particular. But that doesn't stop us from talking about it as if we have some level of expertise. With that said, hockey, not something I understand much, but I do have the ability, I think, like many of you do, to watch a sporting event and recognize a mismatch when you see it. Last night's final score, 2-1 Carolina in overtime, could not have been more misleading. During the course of the game, I texted multiple friends of mine who are, you know, hockey guys. One of them was at the game, one of them was not. And I just said, is this as one-sided as it appears to be? Like, or am I missing something? And the reaction was, Caps are getting their ass kicked. One friend of mine did say, here it is, quote, doesn't matter if your goalie is stoning everything coming his way, close quote. And yeah, Logan Thompson was the star last night in the game and almost pulled off, I would say, a stunner, yet I think it happens in hockey all the time, where you get a team that is clearly the better team overall, but they lose, or they're in overtime, you know, because the goalie can stop everything that comes his way and keep a team in a game single-handedly. Some of the statistics from this game are unbelievable. How about these numbers? Hold on. Had them in front of me. So the Caps, in terms of shots on goal, 33-14. Now, we've seen, you know, disparities like that before. I don't know how often you see shot attempts at 94-34. Carolina had more, 60 more shot attempts than the Caps did in the game. You know, I saw this stat at the end of the game that the Caps had more block shots than Carolina did, and I'm like, well, yeah, no duh. I mean, when you have 60 more shots than the opponent is going to have more block shots than you.
Not only that, Kevin, but they also had more block shots than shot attempts.
The Caps did.
Yes.
I mean, they out-hit the Caps 44-31. And then I saw this stat because I kept saying to myself watching the game and then texting with friends because I was watching the game by myself last night. I was like, I mean, when does the puck get out of the zone that Carolina can score in? Like, I don't understand how a team can dominate. You know, they call it tilting the ice. The ice was tilted completely. 180 degrees. Would that be it? Yeah, I think it would be.
Yeah.
I mean, they doubled the offensive zone ice time than the Caps, 33-28 to 16-51. I actually thought it would have been much worse than that. I don't know anything about this sport, but I'm a sports fan like many of you. And that was a one-sided ass-kicking. You know, the other thing that struck me as a comparison to the Montreal series, you know, one thing, and I talked about this with Max, I talked about it with Joe and others during the first series, it was very, very clear that the Caps were a bigger, stronger, more physical team. Last night, Carolina was as big, they were as physical, and by the way, just more skilled. I can't believe how the Caps just never seemed to be able to put passes together. They were never on sticks as they were trying to get out of their own zone. And meantime, Carolina, every pass is right on the stick of a skater. They were just so much better. And yet, it's 1-0 midway through the third period. That's hockey for you, man. Random as you know what. It is so random. The goal was a great goal by Dylan Strome. Don't get me wrong. Alexi Protas. It was a great goal. All right. That was a big time goal and they needed it. And you could tell that Carolina, despite completely dominating the game, they were getting to that point where they were starting to feel like, oh my God, we can't lose this game. And the one thing that I would say in watching the game, and I think I did see a stat on this that backed me up, is that the really good chances weren't necessarily there. There was a volume of shot attempts, 94 to 34, which, Max, you'd have to tell me right now, how unusual is that disparity?
Very. You could immediately see it right out of the gate. Like, I was at the game. Carolina was buzzing from the jump. The only time the Caps really looked good was coming out to start the second period. And then from the rest of the way, the Canes just had their foot on the gas, like, the entire time. They just looked like the better team, the more well-polished team. Their passes were crisp. They were just flying all over the ice. The only thing the Caps really tried to get going for them was the physical game. Ovi was throwing the body around.
The one stretch when Ovi had the two hits, that one sequence was like, okay, maybe they can turn it around with Ovi sparking them. But no.
But yeah.
Like, their power, they had two power plays in the game.
Yes.
I mean, you talk about impotent. There was no chance. In meantime, Carolina, it was almost impossible to, clear the puck against their power play. But what I was in the midst of saying was, I did see a stat, and I can't find it right now. But the one thing that I observed in watching the game is that they didn't have a lot of, like, obvious great chances.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Logan Thompson was great, but it wasn't like he was making one miraculous save after another.
Yeah.
A lot of them were right on his glove. By the way, real quickly, was that overtime goal that he gave up a bad goal?
It was on the other end, so I couldn't really see it, but, like, looking at the replay...
Well, you've seen it on replay, right?
Yeah, exactly. Looking at the replay, it didn't
look... His pads.
It didn't look that bad. I mean, like, things are just going to slip through sometimes, and... When you're fighting for your life and putting the team on your back the way that Logan Thompson has, especially last night, even if it's like kind of a bad goal, you're still going to get a pass in my book, especially for how well you played throughout the entirety of the game. It's just one's going to get through eventually, especially when they're peppering you as hard as Carolina was.
Yeah. Look, these things are their own entities a lot of the time, these games. You know, I was trying to come up with, like, the football analogy to last night. It's actually not that hard. It's like the game in which you're watching and one team is rolling up, 450 yards and they're 8-for-12 on third down. And for some reason, when they get into the red zone, there's a tip ball that gets picked off. There's a couple of missed field goals. And all of a sudden, like, this game that's been dominated by one team, it's like 13-13. Mm-hmm. And it's going to overtime. And you're like, oh my God, how did that happen? But then, they drive it down the field. They score a touchdown in overtime. They win the game. But it should never have been that close. That was last night. I mean, last night was the equivalent of like a 300-yard advantage, an 8 out of 13 first down to 1 out of 10 on third down for the other team, a time of possession advantage of 37 to 23. Like, it was just an absolute one-sided beatdown, but miraculously, and it happens a lot more in hockey, than it does in football or basketball, the team that was getting its absolute ass handed to them still had a chance to win the game. Now, if you're asking me to give you the adjustments, I can't. I read Spencer Carberry's, the press conference notes, and he said, we'll have to talk about things that have to change for game two. There's a lot of X's and O's. There's a lot of physicality stuff. There's a lot of puck battle stuff. We'll narrow it down because you can obviously go down about 20 different avenues from tonight. We'll narrow it down and give them a concrete plan of what needs to improve and how it needs to look, and then we'll get to work on it. So I can't sit here and tell you that this is going to be an indication of what the rest of the series will be, because I know that things change and each one of these games can be their own entities. But last night's game as a standalone was jarring. Like, I can't remember being so, from an observation standpoint, it be so obvious that one team just was so much better than the other team.
Yeah.
I mean, the puck never ever seem to get into the offensive end for the Caps consistently enough for them to generate scoring chances. And I didn't see the – it was after the second period where I think they put up a stat on the shot attempts. I'm like, yeah, that kind of says it all. Now, someone would have to explain to me, is volume of shot attempts a style of play that pays off more often than not if the shot attempts aren't high-quality chances consistently? And by the way, with all of those shot attempts, do you leave yourself vulnerable to sort of breakouts? Because Ryan Leonard had a chance with a breakaway one-on-one to give them the lead, and he couldn't get it done. So I'd ask you, Max, you're a hockey guy. When you have the ice tilted as much as Carolina did last night, and you're just peppering shots near the goal, shot attempts, not all of the shots on goal, although I think they hit the post
twice.
I think it was four times.
Yeah, it was twice in the third. I'm sorry. And yeah,
I think it was four or five times for the game.
It was a lot. It was too many.
Do you leave yourself with that aggressive style more vulnerable to giving up something easy, 2-on-1, 3-on-2, 1-on-0 on the other end?
I think it depends on what you're telling your defensemen, because if your defensemen are sitting back and like ready to backskate, ready to play defense and you know, face that forecheck, like I think that if your forwards are pressing and you it's good to get as many shot attempts on goal as you can, cuz if no matter how many the more shots, the more likely it is to go in, you know.
I mean, 94 shot attempts but 33 shots on goal.
Yeah.
And high quality chances were less than that. I was looking for that number.
And a lot of times during the game, like, the Caps were doing a pretty good job at, as good as they could. That's why it was one zippy for like a good portion of the game. The Caps were just getting in front of pucks, playing square, getting down, blocking shots. Like, I think Matt Roy had 6 blocks, and someone else did too. I can't remember off the top of my head, but like that's a lot of pucks to the body, like throughout the course of a game. It was Brandon Duhaime's who it was. Shout out the fourth line. They played all right.
Well, you know, tomorrow night can be a completely different thing. We'll see. There was a reason that Carolina was a solid favorite to win the series, and I saw the reason last night. I think many of you did as well. It doesn't guarantee anything. It's hockey. And Logan Thompson could stop everything. He could stop, 45 shots on goal out of 100 attempts in game two, and the Caps could, get one on the power play and get, a shorthanded goal. Who knows? But it really was obvious watching the game last night why the odds makers made Carolina a solid -175 to -190 favorite, depending on where you bet it or looked at it. That was what I was looking for last night, and you got it last night. We had John Walton on the show yesterday, and he said if shot attempts, are like at 15 after the first period, that's a problem. And they were up there, and yet the Caps had the lead. Emily Kaplan was there last night. She'll join us next.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped death at the hands of the Manson family? But what about the real-life brutal murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Carolina with a 1-0 series lead after dominating game one, but needing overtime to get it done. Game two tomorrow night back at Capital One. Last night on the call for ESPN was the terrific Sean McDonough with Ray Ferraro and Emily Kaplan, who is the on-ice interviewer and observer. She does a phenomenal job. I'm a big fan. Emily joins us right now. You can follow Emily on X on Twitter, at Emily M. Kaplan. So, admittedly, I don't know a lot about hockey until this time of year, Emily, when I watch it a lot, and I love playoff hockey. Was it as one-sided last night as it appeared to have been from the ice level?
Well, firstly, thank you for having me on, Kevin, and it's so great to connect. Appreciate the kind words.
Yep.
Yes. Bottom line, yes, it was. You know, I've been around this Capitals team a lot, cover them a lot in the regular season. I was there pretty much the last 2 weeks of the regular season as Obi was closing down on the record and through their whole first-round series as well. And this is a really well-coached team. It's just a great team with an identity and a lot of guys that play hard for a coach that always seems to have the right adjustments. And last night was the first night I can remember them just looking disjointed, like they just didn't have it. And okay, like maybe there's this rust, there's a long layoff, the other team is dealing with it too, but the fact that it didn't get better over the game was just puzzling to me. You know, Spencer Carberry has gone out of his way to compliment the Montreal Canadiens, their first round opponent, you know, of how valiant they were. But the truth is, and the coaches were saying this to me in the middle of the game, and I think this is what they're going to be talking about heading into game two, the Carolina Hurricanes are just a different beast. They are seasoned. They're ready for the playoffs. They apply a ton of pressure, and the Caps just need to make sure they're on their A game. And I think they'll make their adjustments, but it definitely was as lopsided as it looked in game one.
So the shot attempts, 94-34. I'm just curious, is that like unprecedented territory in terms of one-sidedness on a shot attempt stat line?
You know, it would be a bigger deal if the team they were playing wasn't the Carolina Hurricanes, because this is their MO. You know, sometimes they get a bit of slack for it in the hockey community because it's just shots, 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 shots all the time. And Spencer Carberry is like, we have a very similar system, but the biggest difference with the Capitals is shot selection over shot quantity. And so I think that this is often what you see with the Carolina Hurricanes. Critics of them will say, well, it kind of disguises, maybe they're not as dominant as they look, it's just the way they play. At the same time, this is who they are, it's their identity. I also find them to be very well coached by Brindamore. They're very consistent. So I think that's the only reason I wouldn't raise a huge alarm, especially when we're talking about shot attempts.
So that's something they're known for. I'm curious, is that an analytics thing? Is that an analytics-driven number that Carolina's bought into?
Well, their general manager, Eric Tulsky, definitely comes from an analytics background. If you don't know about him, I would suggest you Google him. He has a fascinating way that he got into the hockey world. He's got a bunch of patents. He's a PhD. He's far smarter than any of us. But their coach, Rod Brindamore, is a guy that played in this league for a very long time and is all about effort. And he's known for his workout habits and being Rod the Bod. And I think his system, yes, he's bought into a bit of the analytics, and I think that's definitely analytics based, but his philosophy is all about work and effort. And it's, you know, again, it's a very aggressive style. They're pressing you all the time. They're, you know, getting shot attempts all the time. And so I think it's a blend of both that creates the Carolina Hurricanes identity.
We're talking to Emily Kaplan from ESPN. So when you get a result like last night, and it's not totally unusual when one team dominates, but this sport is built for a goaltender to keep you in the game and for the results sometimes to go the opposite way of the team that's dominated. How good was Logan Thompson last night, and how good has he been in the postseason so far?
Yeah, he's been spectacular. I just think Logan Thompson, and really Charlie Lindgren, you know, kind of gets lost in this. He fell off a little bit at the end of the regular season, but they were so spectacular for the Caps all season long. Logan rose to a different level, though, to really take the starter's position. And he's just one of those guys that had an interesting path to get to the NHL. You know, wasn't necessarily a blue-chip prospect, but always worked his butt off. And a really fascinating guy to talk to all the time. And I think there was a lot of questions, right, because he missed a bit at the end of the regular season. They were saying it's upper body injury. I do believe it was a head injury. And then they name him as the game one starter coming in cold, and he was just fantastic in that game one, showed no signs of rust. And I think that they're really lucky that they have something special in Logan Thompson, a starter that they can ride out hopefully through a long playoff run. And if they have to turn to Charlie Lindgren, I think they feel very confident in him too.
So in sports, in these series, sometimes these games are kind of one game entities and there's no carryover. It would be hard not to see some carryover after watching last night. But what do you think Spencer Carberry, the adjustments are? What are the adjustments the Caps have to make to ensure that the ice isn't tilted as much as it was last night?
Yeah, I mean, the word that they were using last night was hesitation. I think maybe it's just even a mindset of not letting the Canes dictate the play and saying, guys, like, we have a system too. And I think that the players, just for whatever reason, were overwhelmed. You saw an adjustment mid-game yesterday that I think you'll see continue for game two, which is Alexei Protas, who's been one of their best players all season long. He came back from a very serious skate cut injury. he was starting on the fourth line, but as the game progressed, you saw him get some looks in that top six and back on Ovi's line, and I'd expect him to start on, you know, with Strome and Ovi in game two. And then I'm trying to think of what other adjustments they're going to make. I honestly feel like it's just kind of like a mindset thing where, like, they came into this and maybe just taking things a little for granted, feeling good about the way things went with Montreal. And I think more so just, like, understanding that this is going to be a battle. And I know that these guys will, because it's just what they've done all season long. They've exceeded expectations. Every time everyone thinks they're going to fall off, they always find another level. But I think those are some of the things that you're going to see. Just some, also just trying to move the puck a bit quicker and up the ice. I think that was one thing that they just, again, the hesitation, like, it didn't look fresh. It didn't look crisp.
So what's it been like? You've been a part of covering a lot of these games this year because of the OV chasing down of Gretzky. What's it been like to be a part of that and to witness it up close?
Yeah, it's super special, and it's a privilege, something I don't take for granted. I really feel privileged just to get a glimpse into this team and why Ovechkin is so beloved in this league and what makes him, you know, just one of the enduring characters and, you know, hockey players of our time. I think he's a way better captain than people realize, the way that he leads by example. He sets the tone. He's also really goofy, and he's funny, and, you know, he's always keeping it light. It's a really special group of guys. I think they all realize that in preseason. They brought in a bunch of new players, all in the early, you know, mid-20s age, to try to make sure that they could, you know, retool on the fly. And they also seem to enjoy each other. So it's one of the more fun teams that I've been able to be around. And to be there, part of history, is something that, you know, I'll remember for the rest of my career, because Wayne Gretzky's record is something people in hockey said was unattainable. No one ever thought that it would be broken. And for it to be broken by Alex Ovechkin and in the way that he did, I mean, I'm still speechless by it.
Do you think, like, last night was a bit jarring, I think, after the first round series against Montreal, and it's been a memorable season with the Ovi chase and the Caps unexpectedly having the season that they had as a team. Do you think they're in trouble in this series?
I don't think they're in trouble in this series because of the way they played in game one. I always thought this was going to be a 6 or 7 game series. I just think, they need to show up with their A game next game, point blank. I mean, if you lose 2 at home, that's when you've got the issue. You know, when you split at home, okay, like, that's common in Stanley Cup playoffs, where parity is, you know, why we love it. And any team that gets in has a chance. And these are two really, really great programs. So I wouldn't, like, raise the alarms right now after game one loss, but if you go down 0-2 and you have to head to Raleigh, which is a really difficult place to play, I would be concerned.
ESPN's Emily Kaplan joining us. You just said Carolina is a difficult place to play. You get to be front and center in some incredible sports environments. It's like every night when I flip it, whether it's Dallas or Winnipeg or Edmonton or Toronto in particular, and I know Montreal was off the charts for their 2 home games in the first round series. What is the most electric atmosphere in terms of home ice in the sport?
So I'm in Toronto right now, and this little dirty secret is I don't think it's Toronto at all. I think it's a very corporate crowd to get up for this national anthems, but they're known as kind of a late arriving crowd, especially between period breaks. Like, I wouldn't necessarily pick the Leafs, even though you might assume them, right? Because of their long-standing top drought. I think most of the true fans are outside in the plaza, you know, cheering their butts off there. Winnipeg, I haven't had the privilege of going there in these playoffs. I have been there in the past for a whiteout, and that's just something cool. Like, that's just unreal. I didn't get to go to the 2 games in Montreal because Turner had those games. But being there for 4 Nations at the Bell Center for those USA-Canada games, and what the Capitals players were telling me, that was the best environment they had ever played in. It's just such a unique hockey market. They're so passionate, and that building, it just, I mean, obviously it's rich with history, but they get up, and the fact that it was on a Friday night, I think that city was rocked upside down. I'd have to pick Montreal for number one.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine who went to game 3, and he's a hockey fan. He says of all the sporting events he's ever been to, he's never been in a more electric, raucous environment, pregame in particular, than Montreal for that night. So I think a lot of people probably feel the same way. So you have this thing where at the end, your interviews, by the way, are phenomenal. I mean, you're so, your brevity is incredible, but they're just great questions, and you're direct and to the point. It seems like the reaction to you is just really, really great from players and coaches. But you do this thing where you say thank you at the end of interviews in the player or coach's native language. How many native language thank yous have you had to learn, or did you know a lot of them already?
You know, just being around the sport, it's such a multicultural sport. I mean, it's right. just a diverse sport in terms of, you know, a country. So Finnish, Swedish, Russian, Czech, I always mispronounce. My boyfriend gets on me all the time for it, and the guys never correct me. I'm always on David Pasternak, like, come on, like, let me get it right. French, and, you know, there's a couple other ones. I think for me, it's just a little sign of respect, and I think it's just a reminder to the viewer at home that what these guys are doing is really difficult when English is your second language and you're doing a live interview on television. And that's uncomfortable, and it's pretty brave and courageous. And so I think sometimes as viewers forget that, and it's just like a gentle reminder of like, hey, let's just like remember where this guy came from. Remember, you know, how hard he's working. And I think the players appreciate it too, because that's a part of their story that they're really proud of.
Is there one you haven't done yet? Is there a thank you haven't done yet?
Good question. You know what? I felt bad yesterday. Alexei Protas, he's Belarusian, and yeah. I'm pretty sure you say thank you in Belarusian differently than you do in Russian. I just knew that he did speak Russian, so I went with my spasiba, and I know that works, but I got to practice that one too.
You do a great job. I know you got to rush off to the Toronto skate this morning. Good luck tonight. You'll be back in D.C. tomorrow night, right?
Oh, she sure will be.
She sure will be.
Yeah.
Thanks, Emily.
I guess the weekend's off, though. Couch my week this weekend. I look forward to that.
Oh, you get the weekend off. How does that work? There are games.
Yeah, it's the weird window of scheduling, I think, you know, with the two different NBA and NHL playoffs, ESPN and Turner. So Turner gets all the games Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And you know what? I really look forward to watching their coverage.
Our friend Tariq El-Bashir actually is on the ice for some of those games for TNT.
No, we love Tariq. He does a great job.
Yeah, he does a great job. Keep up the good work. Really enjoy it. Thanks, Emily, for your time.
Appreciate you, Kevin.
Emily Kaplan, everybody, from ESPN, ABC. Caps and Canes tomorrow night, game two. Again, no local. Once we get to the second round, there's no Monumental involved anymore. So no more Joe B, no more Locker, no more, you know, the boys, Alan May, Koken especially, back in the studio or on the ice. It's all national from now on. I'll tell you, Sean McDonough is excellent. I think this guy, Ray Ferraro, you hockey fans would know more than I would about him, but I think he's good. Emily's phenomenal. That is how you do that job. You know, every kind of interview is different. Some are more conversational. Some are, you know, just direct into the point, and she has that job where it's direct into the point, and she gets it right almost every night. We thank her because she was busy flying to Toronto and then getting to their skate this morning before their game two tonight against Florida, where they have a 1-0 series lead. That was interesting. Toronto, more of a corporate crowd. You know, Toronto, for the Maple Leafs, they have not won the Cup since 67. This was one of the dominant NHL teams. I didn't know this until very recently. One of the more dominant NHL teams in the 60s. They had a run of like 4 Stanley Cups in 6 years, and they haven't won one or been back to one since 1967. All right, that is a drought, boys and girls, all right? That is 33 plus 25, 58 years since they've played in a Stanley Cup final, let alone won one. And their fans have been starved for it over the years, but that was interesting to hear her say that it's kind of a corporate crowd and late arriving. And you get that with sort of the wine and cheese corporate crowd situations in sports. Now, what they do, Max, in all of these Canadian places, more so than maybe the U.S. places, although maybe I'm wrong about that. This, but they have these plazas outside of the arenas.
Yeah,
where the Toronto situation, the Winnipeg situation, the other night watching that, it's thousands of fans, like mm-hmm. the Caps did during their Stanley Cup. You know, when they got to the Eastern Conference Finals, anyway, and into the Stanley Cup. But yeah, the Montreal crowd apparently is off.
They're bananas.
The chain.
They're crazy. They're so unbelievably loud, according to reports, that like it's ear piercing almost.
Yeah. Well, it would make sense. Toronto is obviously a more cosmopolitan city than any other in Canada, with probably the exception of Vancouver. I'm assuming those would be the top two kind of, you know, cosmopolitan, diverse, et cetera, cities in Canada, and probably in terms of affluence, right up there with Vancouver as well. I'm guessing. I could be wrong. For all I know, you know, Winnipeg is a very upper crust city. I don't think it is.
No,
I think it's more of a working class city.
They are. They the whiteout, yeah. They love the shirt. They are a huge hockey town. Like, Winnipeg is, it's incredible.
They love their hockey, and there are so many Canadian teams. You've got Winnipeg, you've got Edmonton, you've got Toronto still around. And it's been, correct me if I'm wrong, since Montreal's last Stanley Cup that a Canadian team's won one.
I believe that's
been a long time.
Yeah, it's been. I don't think they've won in the 2020, in this millennium.
In this century, yeah. So we got to go back to the 90s for Montreal,
something like that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. If you want to weigh in, 301-230-0980. We usually don't do hockey call segments on this show. They're a little bit dicey, but during the playoffs, we can do it. 301-230-0980. Did you see last night's game as worrisome? They lost 2-1 in overtime. If you just tuned in for the overtime and you saw the final score, wow, hell of a game. It was a hell of a game. It was exciting, but it was a one-sided dominated game by Carolina. Reason to be concerned or not? 301-230-0980. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, the team980.com. We are free and live on the Odyssey app.
All right, the arms race in the NFC Beast is heating up as the Cowboys traded for George Pickens and a sixth-round pick they sent over to Pittsburgh for a 2026 third and a 2027 sixth. Gabe Davis has been released by the Jaguars after he signed a three-year deal prior to the 2024 season. He had 20 receptions for 239 yards and two touchdowns in 10 games played in 2024. Some name news. No, not where you think we're going. The Utah Hockey Club has officially chosen a name. They will now be known as the Utah Mammoth, a permanent identity for the NHL franchise after a 13-month process that included 850,000 ballots cast by fans in multiple rounds of voting. The Nats split their doubleheader with the Cleveland Guardians. In Game 1, they win 10-9. Jorge Lopez gets credited with the win, and Kyle Finnegan gets the save. Game 2, they lose 9-1. Brad Lord had 6 innings pitched, 3 hits, 3 earned runs, and 4 strikeouts. The Caps, unfortunately, dropped to the Carolina Hurricanes 2-1 in overtime. Jacob Slavin with the overtime winner. The Canes just outplayed the Caps in spite of the scoreboard, and Logan Thompson played an incredible game, might I add. Game 2 is tomorrow at 6:45 on 106.7 The Fan. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, and hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that's what's trending.
Are you concerned about this series after the Caps were completely dominated in Game 1, even though the final score didn't reflect it? 301-230-0980. Come on, Caps fans. Chance for you to weigh in on the phone lines. Come on, Sheehan. You going to take some Caps calls in November and December? We're doing it now during the midst of the playoffs. 301-230-0980. How concerned, how worried are you after what you witnessed last night in Game 1? Phone lines are open. Before we get to those, let's do a quick what do you got. Yes, yeah, so there was a trade in the NFL. The Cowboys have traded for Steelers wide receiver George Pickens. He'll line up opposite CeeDee Lamb in the Cowboys offense. They traded a third rounder in next year's draft. They also sent a 2027 fifth round pick and got a 2027 sixth round pick back from the Steelers. So on day three of the 2027 draft, when we're hanging out down on the mall on a beautiful spring day, the Cowboys will have the Steelers' sixth round pick, but the Steelers will have the Cowboys' fifth round pick. But this is an interesting trade. A couple of things that we learned from this. The Cowboys apparently would have selected McMillan, the wide receiver from Arizona, had he fallen to 12th. That was their target in the draft. They wanted Tet McMillan, the wide receiver from Arizona, to team up with C.D. Lamb. He went to Carolina at number 8 overall. Tyler Booker was there, and the Cowboys ended up taking the best guard in the 2025 NFL draft at number 12 overall. You know, I wonder a couple of things about this. Number one is, you know, the Steelers, they don't typically get these things wrong. They know their people. George Pickens has been a bit of a problem. Let's be honest here. And, you know, this may work in Dallas for a while until Pickens isn't getting the ball, and then all hell will break loose, because once they start to feed him the ball, then CeeDee Lamb may have a problem with it. Like, there's some high-level dysfunction possibility with this deal. Remember, you know, the Steelers moved on from Antonio Brown. Remember when they absolutely fleeced the Bears in the Chase Claypool trade? They got a third rounder for the Notre Dame kid who clearly couldn't play and was a problem, and they had moved on from him quickly after drafting him in the second round. So when it comes to this kind of stuff, I think the Steelers actually know what they're doing. Remember, they traded for DK Metcalf, so they had him. But the combination of Metcalf and Pickens would have been, you know, an interesting combination for a team with a quarterback, but they don't have one right now. So on one hand, it's like Steelers typically know what they're doing in these situations. The Cowboys typically do not. There's high volatility possibility in Dallas with Pickens on that roster. And then there is this. Could Aaron Rodgers be pulling the strings behind the scenes on something like this? Maybe one of the reasons he's waited, he looks at the Pittsburgh situation and goes, I don't want to have that guy on my team. I don't want to throw to Pickens, no matter how talented he is. Trade for DK Metcalf, get rid of Pickens, let's go. They drafted Caleb Johnson. They still have Jaylen Warren. They've got Freiermuth. They've got Metcalf. Other receivers on their roster include Robert Woods from Houston, I think. And, of course, they've got a good defense. But, man, the Pittsburgh roster right now without a quarterback, this looks to be like the worst Pittsburgh team on paper, unless they are to add a quarterback they can still play. I would imagine that if it's not Rodgers, they may make a run at Cousins. I don't think they go into the season with Mason Rudolph, unless they're legitimately waiting on next year's draft and trying to tank the season to a certain degree to have a choice at better quarterbacks next year. Real quickly, one of the quarterbacks at the top of the mock drafts in 2026 is Cade Klubnik from Clemson. I don't get that at all. I've watched this dude now for 2 straight years. He stinks. I don't get that one at all. But there's a lot of time between now and next year's draft. So the Cowboys add Pickens. So now, remember, the Cowboys have a lot of new, talent on their roster. They added in their backfield Javonte Williams, Miles Sanders. They drafted Jaden Blue from Texas. They've now added George Pickens to CeeDee Lamb. Defensively, remember, they brought Dante Fowler back. They brought in Kenneth Murray from Tennessee, the linebacker. There's a lot going on in Dallas. That roster, when healthy, you know, if they've got Bland and Hooker and Diggs and Parsons and, you know, that dude Overshown, who really played well before he got hurt last year, they're okay on defense. Offensively, will Pickens make a difference? Will Javonte Williams or Jaden Blue be a running back, or Sanders be a running back that they haven't had in a few years? We'll see. The key, obviously, for them is Dak can't go down. Like, they don't have a backup anymore. Actually, they do. They traded for Joe Milton in New England. That's the backup quarterback they have right now. You know, after years of having Cooper Rush, you know, backing up Dak Prescott and playing pretty well, Cooper Rush is somewhere else. I can't even remember where Cooper Rush is. So there you go. Big NFL news this morning. The Cowboys, Jarrett promised a trade of substance, I think is what he said before the draft. And you just got, you know, somewhat of a trade of substance. The big question left in the NFL right now, or there are three of them. Trey Hendrickson, Jalen Ramsey, and the quarterback in Pittsburgh, who is it? I don't think I'm missing anything in terms of the three other big stories. You know, there are still some free agents out there. We've talked about some of them. You know, Za'Darius Smith, others. You know, J.K. Dobbins, Nick Chubb. But in terms of the three biggest outstanding NFL storylines after the schedule comes out next week is who's going to play quarterback in Pittsburgh? Will Trey Hendrickson re-sign or be traded? And Jalen Ramsey, where will he be traded to and for what? All right, 301-230-0980. We got a couple of callers on hold. Are you concerned about the Caps after what you witnessed last night? I said this at the beginning of the show. I'm not a hockey expert by far. We're not expert in anything that we talk about, but we have a much better handle on other things. I do anyway. But last night, any sports fan could spot a blowout that should have been reflected on the scoreboard. The Caps got outshot 94-34 in shot attempts, 33-14 shots on goal, out-hit, outplayed, out-timed in the zones, in the offensive zone, 2-1. It was an ice-tilting, one-sided beatdown that was not reflected in the final score, but the team that won the game clearly deserved to win the game. Are you concerned about the Caps after game one? Are you worried that this season, this series could get away from them? Let's start with Ryland in OKC. We talked to Ryland sometimes during football season. Ryland, go ahead.
Kev, hope you're doing well, buddy.
Yeah, good to hear your voice, Ryland. No, I know you're Canadian too. Let's get that out in front. So you've got a little bit more expertise in this area.
I've played a few games in my career, for sure. I would say I wouldn't be too concerned just because the fact of the Ovechkin factor and just the team of destiny along with that Russian gas. I would say that although you guys are saying a lot of good things about Thompson, I think he's a little bit shaky. To me, that overtime winner last night was soft. I mean,
yeah,
I thought that might
have been a soft goal that he let up. I asked Max that earlier. That seemed like one that is stoppable.
Oh, you have to make that save in overtime. I mean, if that was in regulation, it wouldn't be the end of the world. But in overtime, you got to get your pad down there. You can't let that one squeak through. I would just say the biggest game of the year, of course, is tomorrow night. And you can't go back down to Raleigh down 2-0. Not a chance he'll come back from that hole. But I think they just need to capitalize on their power play and start playing more downhill. I don't think shot attempts are necessarily a good thing. But in the sense of Carolina, they're just firing everything on Logan Thompson. Honestly, because I think he's a little bit shaken. I think they know that. So I wouldn't be surprised if they get 85 shot attempts tomorrow. But for your guys' sake and for the capital and the district, I hope the Ovechkin can score a couple goals tomorrow night and go back to Raleigh 1-1 and get steal one there and get back home ice. So good talking to you, Kev. Hope you're doing well. Oklahoma City's buzzing right now.
It's an interesting take, and I appreciate it as always, because I would not have gone with Logan Thompson look shaky. I would have gone with and did go with the only reason they had a chance in the game last night was Logan Thompson. But that's interesting.
Yeah, for sure, right?
Yeah.
And I think, I think he just looked shaky to me. Like, even in the World Cup there where he didn't make Team Canada, everybody was kind of looking at that, the roster, like, how is he not on this team? Well, watching last night, I that overtime winner says a lot and speaks volumes, because the best goalies make the biggest saves when it matters most, and those ones just can't go through, especially if you're going to win the Cup. So hopefully they can figure it out tomorrow, and he keeps putting that brick wall down so they have a chance. But root for your boys, and hope you're doing well. Kev, good talking to you, and let's go Sting.
Thanks, right? Ryland. Appreciate the call. Joe, go ahead.
Hey, Kevin, what's going on?
What's up, Joe?
50-50 on this. I would not panic after last night because it was one game. However, Kevin, 93 shot attempts, what was it, 31 shot attempts for us? That is alarming. And the fact that it was only a 2-1 overtime loss for us, I mean, Kevin, the other thing about last night is that if Leonard scores, you know, he had that breakaway, and I think he mishandled the puck. If he scores there, are we talking about a victory or a loss in this situation? I don't know, but, Kevin, if we go down 2-0 tomorrow night, going back to down to Carolina, I mean, who knows what happens? The playoffs, anything's possible. But, I mean, the way we got outshot last night, Ovechkin hopefully can step up. I mean, Logan Thompson, I mean, you got to give him credit. He's done everything he can for us in this postseason. I mean, last night he handled a puck in overtime that he doesn't usually save. I mean, he definitely wants someone back, but we'll see. But I'm not panicking yet. But if we go down 2-0 tomorrow night and we get outplayed like that again, it's definitely time to panic. For sure. So take care, Kevin.
Yeah, I would imagine being down 2-0. I mean, look, these hockey games are weird, you know, and random stuff happens. And if you're down 2-0, you just have to get one of them. And then, you know, you get game 5, and then the pressure is on Carolina to end it in game 6. It would seem, though, that this thing would be, if it looks like it did last night, tomorrow night, and instead of losing 2-1 in overtime, they lose by a score that's more reflective of the play, something like 6-1, because that's what it felt like last night. You know, maybe not 6-1, because the quality of chances that they got, you know, weren't consistently high quality chances. But let's just say a 4-0 game or a 4-1 game, it would feel like it would be over going back to Raleigh. That's for sure. But if the Caps play much better tomorrow night, but still lose 3-2 in overtime, you'll feel a little bit better about the possibilities going back to Carolina. You know, we had Emily Kaplan on. She was great talking about some of the adjustments that Spencer Carberry is an excellent X's and O's coach, which he is known for being. So we'll see what happens. I think the thing that will, for me, in watching tomorrow night's game, okay, for a hockey novice, what will be obvious to me is Carolina spending basically the entire night in their offensive zone? If it's more split, I won't probably be able to identify what the Caps did to even up, you know, sort of offensive zone ice time. But that to me seems like an absolute requirement for tomorrow night. You can't score from, you know, behind your goaltender's net. And that's essentially where they were in their defensive, posture all night long. That just doesn't seem like a great place to score from. So, I don't know, maybe there's a strategy of counterpunching and taking those opportunities on less than high quality chances, but a lot of shot volume to turn it into a couple of 2-on-1s, 3-on-2s, or a Ryan Leonard situation and win that way, Maybe. I think it's interesting to kind of watch this sport this time of year. And I'm interested because people have told me how good Spencer Carberry is and kind of, you know, figuring things out. I'm really interested to see what it looks like tomorrow night, because last night was a massacre that was not reflected on the scoreboard. All right. Trey Amos, Washington's second round pick. Why did he fall to the end of the second round? There's some reporting out there that may indicate the reason. I'll share that with you next.